This is a CNA podcast.
Hi, I'm Lin Suling, and welcome to Heart of the Matter. For more than 150 years, there was only one way readers knew what was happening around them, a print newspaper. It was a simple, successful formula. Journalists wrote stories, and salesfolk sold ads. As far as business models went, this was watertight. Until, of course, technology came and swept everything in its wake. It's been 2 weeks since Singapore Press Holdings' announcement that its media business would be restructured. Yet perhaps even more time and distance will be needed to grasp the full implications of this move. We know good journalism remains ever more important in a crowded, loud digital space full of clickbait and misinformation. So what's the best way to ensure the Singapore news industry can continue to thrive? What is a sound, sustainable funding model to ground news outlets without compromising on integrity and independence? It's Thursday, May 20th, 2021, and today we talk about the role of the media, the struggle to find a viable business model, and the future of journalism. Joining me online are Elmi Nekma, Associate Professor at the Department of Communications and New Media at NUS.
Hello, Suling. Hello, everyone.
And Natalie Pang, Senior Lecturer, also from the same department.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Suling, for having me.
Speaking about the news, let's begin with the personal. So imagine it's tomorrow, Friday, you just woke up. How do you get the feel of the news? Walk us through your daily news consumption habit and how often you check the news. What are you looking for?
Well, for me, I make use of my social media. So I use LinkedIn and Facebook mainly. So I look at my contacts on LinkedIn, for instance, and look at what they are reading, you know, what they are sharing. But I also subscribe to Straits Times Telegram channel, and I get my daily news bite from Telegram. And I also make use of my email, where I get daily news briefings from Channel News Asia.
Very happy to hear you say CNA, right? Then what about you, Elmi?
My daily schedule, I'll send my kids to school first in the morning, and then I'll reach back home, and then I'll take the train to work. The timing will usually be around 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m., and it takes 1 hour travel. And that's where I consume my news, in the train. I'll first go to my social media platforms, and then I will go into my news subscription that I follow, and then I'll go into the different news and just to look at what's breaking, what's headline, and what's current. That's my usual everyday routine.
So it seems like the news is a part of most people's daily routine. And I'm thinking back to the SPH announcement, the news that sparked this podcast. Why does it seem like the best days of the news industry has been behind them? Would you agree with that characterization?
You're quite right to say that a business model for news used to be watertight when news media, they were probably about the only sources of news for many people. It's really been this competition from the digitalization of many platforms, including news platforms. And people just simply have many more choices in terms of sources they can go to for news. It's not just Singapore, but around the world, news media, they are declining in terms of the advertising revenue they have been getting.
So Elmi, help me understand, how much of this do you think is a disruption a long time in coming that newsrooms could have foreseen, should have adapted better to changes? Do you think that actually the challenges are intrinsic operational issues to legacy news outlets? Or how much of this do you think actually is a massively changed landscape that destroyed advantages that newspapers have built over many decades?
It has been a long time coming, actually. We first see the change in news when news has lost their unique selling proposition, which is basically to break news. Who gets to break news has changed due to information communication technologies or users on social media, minus the press conferences where journalists and reporters have special access to in order for them to break news. But in everyday kind of news, even in foreign news or local news, reporters have lost the unique point to actually break the news. Everyone now can break news. From that onset, we can see that the selling point of news or reporting has changed onto users or onto citizens or onto independent news outlets or even newer news outlets or alternative news outlets that anyone can actually produce. So that is the part where we can start to see the changes in news, the news landscape and the news business.
But credibility is a big part of this because last year, news readership surged year on year, 73% according to IMDA for Singapore News. And we know in a pandemic, reliable, accurate, timely information is critical. Last year, also in election year, voters relied on the news to make informed decisions at the ballot box. So apart from breaking the news, of course, credible information is important. And demand actually has been at a historic high, irrespective of citizens being able to share news with each other. So why is the news industry still in trouble?
Just to add on to Elmi's point earlier, there is actually many things going on at the same time. On one hand, we have news media that have been running for a long time. So there is something that can be said about the kinds of legacy workflows and models that's been going on, and those workflows and models not catching up to the kinds of changes that has been brought about due to greater digitalization and people using many more digital platforms globally, right? There is actually this erosion of trust in news media as well. So credibility in terms of news is absolutely important, but at the same time, I think we are also contending with people losing general trust in media.
Are you saying that for Singapore though?
Well, no, not really. In the case of Singapore, we actually do have also credible sources, using Elmi's terms, breaking news, right, on different platforms. And these credible sources could be independent journalists, it could be opinion leaders in different domains that make use of a variety of platforms, including Facebook, LinkedIn, instant messaging platforms. In the case of Singapore, I don't think it's more because people are losing trust in news media per se, but they do have many more sources that they can go to that they see as credible.
Indeed, as we have observed, not only in research, but also in what we have just recently experienced during a pandemic, during crisis situations, when there's a period of uncertainty, humans tend to seek answers. In such situations, what we found, an information search trying to provide these answers, unfortunately, they can include misinformation, rumors, or even just hearsay. No, but these are information trying to provide answers. And indeed, as we see in such conditions, then we can see the value of news, or the value of credible news, or the value of credible sources. In other words, tend to take the flight to safety to avoid such risk, to find correct answers, to find credible, trustworthy information. And then we can see then the real value of legacy news organizations that has traditionally been more credible.
Right, like I guess one example would be how people are looking to the news right now as cases and infection numbers in Singapore surge, and people are looking out for whether a circuit breaker will be pulled. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. So we have like government sources like reporting, like gov.sg, for instance, reporting through WhatsApp on the actual numbers. With such very strong sources of information, it's important in conditions where there are really crises, or when humans are facing very huge uncertainty, you can see a greater dependence on news sources or legacy news sources.
I want to pull on that thread a little bit more, because both of you have talked a lot about how the audience have had a lot more choices in terms of credible sources as well. But do you think that audience demands of the news industry has changed over the last 10 years? Is it because of the arrival of smartphones, social media, or just the sheer speed and volume of information? And then also, how much news in Singapore are we able to keep up with that in your assessment?
The volume of information that's actually coming to consumers is so much more than before. We now have more content in our smartphones or tablets, right, than we can ever have time to consume. The challenge then here is what kinds of unique value offering can different news media actually offer to consumers who they want to be loyal. So the challenge is, what kind of unique offering can news media actually offer to the paid subscriber?
Elmi, so weigh in here. As Natalie has pointed out, there have been a variety of players outside the big MediaCorp SPH players. There's Mothership, Rise Media, Yahoo News, Mashle News, and not to mention just a variety of writers on Substack and Medium, or even those with their own blogs. So it's such a huge plethora. Are you confident that mainstream media can hold its own? And what do you think is the biggest challenge to them? What is their unique proposition then?
There's still a strong brand name that's associated with credibility, a long-standing historical context, understanding of the local context in the report of news, the contextualization of the news. There's a very strong value in that, in legacy media. The challenge then is, amid all this competition, is about curation. It's about how do you curate a certain set of news to cater to specific publics or specific target readers. when we think about curation, we must be careful and not to look at curation in the sense of curation of content. Then we might fall into the problem of, you know, echo chambering, ideological posturing of news readers. But instead, what the news organizations or producers can actually look at curation of format. As increasingly when users are, or when readers are, you know, being exposed to news and consuming news across different platforms, they are reliant on certain format, like whether it's in videos, whether it's in live reporting, for instance, whether it's in a podcast, for instance. So users are beginning to be comfortable in their daily diet to include certain format. So perhaps curation in format wise, instead of content, and targeting readers that are very used to certain format might possibly be a formula where you can actually grow your news model.
So we've been talking a lot about the big challenges that the news industry in Singapore has faced, but I just want to take a step back a little bit to really get your sense, both of you, on how significant was this SPH announcement. Because after all, the Singapore news industry has evolved over the years. There have been many new challenges, many new entrants. There are periods of proliferation and consolidation, right? Today being taken out of print circulation, Middle Ground and other websites shuttering. So how much of the SPH announcement, in your view, is an expected ebb and flow of this entire process so far that's been underway for decades? And how much of it was actually a momentous turning point that could reshape the Singapore news industry? What do you think, Natalie?
I think it is significant. I think the change into the CLG model, in many ways, it signals it is an opportunity to move the conversation of how to make SPH sustainable by centering also on the interests of the Singapore society at large. It is significant because of these potential conversations we can have. The news media in Singapore has a good branding, and that's something that should be leveraged. Going back to Elmi's point earlier, actually, he used the word curation. I would use the word diversification.
So I'm hearing you both talk about how the mainstream media in Singapore has a trusted reputation, credibility, and a certain branding to it that is to be upheld. And I'm getting the sense that you're saying this is not just a business, it's an institution, because credible journalism is critical to a thinking society, for people to make sense of new developments with context and analysis. But if people recognize the value of solid, credible, and timely news, why does it seem as if we're expecting news to be low cost or even free? And do you think that we expect news to be a public good? And what are the implications?
It's a bit of putting the genie back in the bottle, right? For many people, they have been reading news for free. To get them to accept that they have to pay for news, actually, that's really challenging to do. Going back to your point about also how news media actually is a kind of institution, I do agree that it is a public good.
Let me weigh in here. You know, when you look at the big news outlets like SCMP, New York Times, Financial Times, so many of them survive, of course, on getting their audience to pay. But so much of news online is free today, though. And it does seem like the news can be subsidized by a lot of alternatives. So can you talk about the viability of a subscription model and whether people will be open to that? Is there some sort of a middle ground you think they'll be open to paying for the news on?
It's actually increasingly important, actually. It suggests that, you know, it has to be diversified, it has to be more competitive, and therefore loosening the grip. But to make it more competitive in order to survive, in order to prosper amid the very global competitive market. But on the other hand, right, if you were to look at the global market itself, users or readers like myself, I subscribe to very global news, such as the BBC, SCMP, Washington Post, the New York Times, and these are all online news. And as I'm consuming or as I'm reading the news, I realize that more and more, I need Singapore perspectives. I need local perspectives on top of just regional ones. How do I see this? How do I understand this from a Singapore context? There is this need still for local or for news to be, I do not like to use the word institutionalized, but provide news in a very local context.
Would you pay for that? And I assume you're paying for some of the news outlets that you already subscribed to?
Well, yes and no. No, in the sense that it really depends on whether that news can provide something really different that I couldn't get from, for example, SCMP reporting of Singapore's situation or Singapore's issue, for instance. So it must really be differentiated. Yes, in the sense that if it provides me another format that I think SCMP, for instance, is not able or not yet able to provide, like, for example, in podcast, news in bite size, or news in, for example, storytelling in certain social media platforms. If I do Instagram and I just want my news to be, you know, in headlines. Unfortunately, yes, that's the condition of reading on social media. I wouldn't mind paying for that. Plus, I can see the kind of effort being put in terms of creation of the news. That's not just cutting and pasting and, you know, rewriting. Readers do see that and they might want to pay for that. Yeah.
Almi, do you have such high expectations of the news, as high as you do for the $14 a month that you pay for Netflix or cable TV, or even the average cost of utilities for a Singapore 4-room flat is $140? How much then do you think they'll pay for the news?
I do subscribe to Netflix and Disney Plus, primarily because they are very family-oriented. That's a different situation. Because news is very much an individual consumption. Netflix are very much family or group oriented. So I would pay for that for those purposes. For news, it's different because I would want to pay for it because I consume news on my own. Unless the news can find a way where it becomes a family consumption kind of way, when news were previously on TV, right? And then you have when we watch news on TV and then everyone sits around the tube at 7 p.m. for certain news, and then the Malay news for myself and my family, etc. at 8 p.m., then it becomes a family, then perhaps I want to pay for that subscription. But until the model, unfortunately, in a social media platform, which is very much individualized, until we can find that level, then I think, yeah, that might possibly open up similarities between the models. Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to respond to Elmi's point about the importance of news catering to the local audience, right? Well, I agree that there is a lot of value of that. But I think from a business sustainability perspective, this is where it also gets challenging, because I think it also has to do with Singapore market being relatively smaller than other markets. When a lot of content is catered just for the local audience, there is that tension that is brought in terms of sustainability and relevance to audience actually beyond our shores. So I do see some of these offerings coming from, say, for instance, South China Morning Post, where there's a lot of news that touches on a variety of both local and regional topics, SCMP research that offers deep insights and deep dives into particular topics that people actually pay for.
So talking about who should pay for it, one interesting fact is the Google-Facebook duopoly sucks in 70% of digital ad spending. And we know that Rupert Murdoch's News Corp has recently sealed a deal for an undisclosed amount after Australian lawmakers put up a new law suggesting that tech giants should pay for news content on their site or face stiff penalties, millions of dollars possibly involved. What's your take on getting big tech to pay for the news?
In the case of Facebook versus Australia, that was kind of an attempt to get Facebook to pay. That wasn't very successful. The Australian government raised that issue of who pays for the news and who pays for the work that the Australian media, in their instance, actually puts in to actually develop all these news articles.
But do you think that's a fair approach? Because after all, the rise of digital platform has decimated the news business model. And yet, on the other hand, people also say newsrooms benefit from using social media to reach a wider audience. So should Google and Facebook be asked to pay for news content on their site? Is that a viable model that should be looked at seriously in Singapore?
My opinion is no. It's not just about one news media versus Facebook. Platforms like Facebook, Google, they have many other sources that they can go to. It's not like they only have one source of news media that they absolutely have to strike an agreement with.
So you're saying that there needs to be some sort of a collective bargaining for that to happen?
If we want to bargain for that to happen, there needs to be collective bargaining and also consensus as to what that bargain looks like.
If I can just offer my thoughts to your previous question, should Facebook and Google pay for news, right? Pay for the news and in a way making it more accessible for users as well as making it more profitable for news producers. It requires a little bit of imagination. And if I were to imagine, right, the question then is why would they want to pay for the news? It's because a lot of eyeballs are on their platform and therefore they are making huge profits from the news. And that's their business model and it works, and therefore they should be paying for it. How then do news organizations or news producers such as Channel News Asia or Straits Times, it seems that news organizations or SPH or even CNA for MediaCorp for that matter, needs to have more resources to actually build up their own ecosystem. You have to build up, and for example, if I may, a news emporium, for instance, where you are able to sustain the number of users or have a formula to actually create, in other words, your own social media platforms. Obviously not to the extent of a social networking site, but perhaps incorporating some really useful social networking technologies or strategies that would sustain interest on that platform, on the emporium, or in the ecosystem or environment. So I think it requires a whole lot of technological, socio-technical imagination and restructuring on top of just business models in order for us to actually visualize or start to imagine new ways in which news organization can, in a way, challenge Facebook or Google's in terms of providing news.
I just want to move into state funding as a business model with subsidies and tax breaks, giving newsrooms resources to basically do what you're saying, Almi, to transform and have the space to focus on journalism for the 21st century. But why does that seem like there's a skittishness over this suggestion? When you think about it, it's a reversion to an old model, to the time when Radio Television Singapore was part of the Ministry of Culture, and that age of news in the 70s and 80s with PBS and NPR.
It does not mean news media actually stops actually looking at ways to make themselves sustainable or even make profits. There's also a lot that has to evolve in terms of diversification strategy. For me, absolutely essential that they don't lose their focus on their core, which is journalism, good journalism. There's actually many opportunities for news media to play a role in terms of sorting out the chaos, in terms of offering a way for the consumer to make sense of all the misinformation they are bombarded with. There's a lot of value in that kind of offering.
I want to talk about the strength of the publishers that takes care of the business side because they play a big role. You think about it, Washington Post thrived after Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos bought the paper. Similar for Time Magazine after Salesforce founder Mark Benioff backed the publication. And people have talked about how Bezos and Benioff have brought a vision, a long-term outlook to the news. They weren't white knights swooping in to save the day. They were good accomplices who weren't involved in the day-to-day but brought that vision. Our laws in Singapore, of course, ensure that media organizations serve the public good and don't allow them to fall in the hands of an individual or group for good reason. But when you look at the members of boards that lead the business of news and you think about what has helped Time and what has helped WAPO, whether this is SPH New Board or otherwise, what expertise and experience are you looking for that are winning formulas in helping the news succeed?
Okay, so the question basically is the board composition. I think we need to have the industry in it, right? Because as comparative models have shown, we need to have the industry insights, the resources to be able to sustain the news model. But we need to have more. We need to have, like, for example, people from the public sector. Back to our conversation, right? News in Singapore and even in other countries, but especially in Singapore's very special or unique context where we are multiracial, we have different religions, and it's really kind of unique if you compare between our regions. We really need to have such sensitivities and such representation in boards. That's one. We need to have people who are in the public kind of sector. These two are, to me, the most essential. And perhaps we might want to have technology. People who are representing the technologies or the technological sector. Because as we know, this restructuring, some may say it's a long time coming. Some may say that it's because of recent developments, rapid developments that SPH can't manage. But one thing's for certain, it's the rapid movement of the technology, right? One time we know possibly CNA is on top, but the next moment when somebody jumps on the latest technology and then things take a pivot and then the model then just changes. So we need to have such minds, technologies who are able to, in a way, foresee and perhaps plan for such changes. Those are just my thoughts. So the public, we need to have people from the public, we need to have businesses, and we also need to have especially the technologies.
What about you, Natalie? What are you looking for when you look at the members of the boards of news organizations?
I am looking for people who understand innovation. For me, these technologists shouldn't just be people who understand the features of different platforms, but they understand how to capitalize on these different features of platforms in a way that actually can innovate for the organization. And this involves actually understanding the digital audience, how they actually consume different content or across a variety of different platforms and make it work, right? bring together, synergize all these different kinds of insights.
Last question. We have to believe that there is a pathway to recovery and sustainability and that news is not a hopeless business. Yet newsrooms around the world are also putting in a lot of effort and we're seeing them moving towards a digital-first model, investing in better journalism, in video streaming, in social media. So to round off this podcast, both of you, what's your sense on what's working and what should be newsrooms' focus in the next bound to ensure future growth and profitability?
Wow, that's an awesome question. That's a very big question.
You go ahead.
In the midst of thinking about diversifying, especially their digital products and offerings, that's really important is that they don't lose the focus on good journalism and the value of the news media as an institution, right? That's actually serves a really important role in society. So anything that actually has to do with offering new products, new branded content, or even events must not lose the focus on journalism, which is the core.
I don't think the news business is quote-unquote hopeless. I think it's so important. More and more important in today's environment, right? In today's informational global news environment. But that's not to say that it's not viable. That's not to say that it's able to make money and flourish. I think it's very challenging. What I can see also is then we have to start questioning one aspect, and which is a very hard question to ask, is whether we can compete within our own markets. Do we see space for local competition? In other words, are there space in the local market for two big players or even two big players and three small players? Perhaps it does signal the competition that's coming from global and compounded by the competition within the local market. It might seem that we are eating into our own pie and, for lack of a better word, cannibalizing one another. But instead, if we were to look perhaps in a more concerted effort and a more focused resource, we can be more competitive.
Almi, Natalie, thanks for that. I guess we can expect further discussions on the challenges and expectation for the news industry in Singapore as questions over its future stew. That was Natalie Pang and Almi Nagmat from the NUS Department of Communications and New Media. Thanks for joining us on Heart of the Matter. The people behind this episode, Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer. And until next week, I'm Lin Su Ling, signing off.